Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, greetings, and welcome. Welcome to all of our listeners and all of our supporters. Us Lifting Us, Economic Development Cooperative. We appreciate having you as part of our listening audience this evening, and we are encouraging you to call in and participate with us as we move forward to have constructive dialogue concerning the current economic condition of the community of people of Black African descent, and also what Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative offers and has to share with our community to ensure that we change that economic condition. So once again, thank you and welcome. And right off the bat this evening, I would like to welcome my co-host and guest, Brother Kimbizi.
Greetings, Sister Nanana. It's good to be with you tonight.
All right. Thank you. Yes, and I guess it would have been good to introduce myself in the beginning as well. Yes, I am Sister Nanana, and I am a board member with Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative, as is Brother Kimbizi. We both are on the executive board and are very pleased to, once a week on Thursday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, have this opportunity to share some time with our listening audience to answer questions and to entertain thoughts and ideas concerning our current economic status and what Us Lifting Us has to offer. And before we get into our dialogue this evening, I'd just like to review a couple of pieces of basic information for those who are out there listening to us this evening. Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative does have a website, usliftingus.com, usliftingus.com, and we encourage you to go to that website and to review it completely if, in fact, you are not familiar with it, and that will provide you with a wealth of information as to what Us Lifting Us is all about and what it has to offer. We're very pleased to have the opportunity and to have this spot on Blog Talk Radio. And one of the ways that you can participate with us when you go to the Us Lifting Us website is to click on the link that says ULU Radio. That's our acronym, ULU, ULU Radio, and you can click in the designated spot and be able to listen in, and also you can call in if you have a question or a comment that you'd like to make. We invite you to please do that, 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. And then press the number 1 on your keypad. And that's how we'll know that you have a question or a comment to make. And we will certainly make an opportunity for you to speak, to pose that question, or to make that comment. Also, the mission of Us Lifting Us. Us Lifting Us mission is to build, maintain, and pass to future generations the machinery of economic self-determination. Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative does have the mechanism and the plan which has been put into motion even as we speak that will lift us from the economic position that we find ourselves in and move us into the future so that we can not only have something to pass on to future generations that will ensure their economic not only survival, but that they will thrive, but that will also position us in such a way that we have all of our needs met and above, over and above having our needs met as well. So that's our mission, to build, maintain, and pass to future generations the machinery of economic self-determination. Well, how are you feeling this evening, Brother Kimbizi? Are you ready to move forward with some dialogue and information that our listening audience will find stimulating and of interest for them this evening?
I'm feeling excited, Sister Nanana, and yes to your question. There's so much going on in the world, and it all boils down to economics. And Us Lifting Us has a plan that will enable our people to gain control over the economic destiny of the places where we live. So let's get right into it.
Yeah, let's get right into it. And you started right out by saying there's so much going on in the world right now, and it all boils down to economics. I can't help but think that for many in our community, that's new information. We have never in the past before looked at all world events as having a genesis or having a basis in economics. So could you say more about that and perhaps give us an example of an event and how that ties in with economics, please?
Well, yeah. Basically, what we're living through a period of extreme crisis in capitalism, and there's a war going on in the capitalist system as to which faction will control the country. And Donald Trump just represents the extreme right wing of that faction. He's really not that bright, and he's more or less following the instructions of the people who are paying the bills. So that we're in the midst of this crisis, it's being revealed how little regard there is for democracy, how little regard there is for institutions like freedom of the press, for the rights of workers to organize and collectively bargain. All that goes out of the window. And the veneer of civility has been stripped away, and we're seeing the vicious, bare-bones knuckle fight that's taking place to see which faction will actually run the country. And that's why so much of the policy seesaws back and forth on seemingly on a day-to-day basis. What, one minute there's going to be a conference with the North Koreans, the next day it's being canceled. And all the while, the investigation into collusion with the Russians is gaining momentum, and Trump is becoming more and more desperate. And how that affects us as a people is that the institutions that allow people to express themselves at the ballot box, if you don't have millions of dollars to buy your candidates and to run their ads, your voice gets lost in the process. So it's just become very, very clear to us that in this arena, if we're going to have genuine political power, we first must build economic infrastructure that allows us to harness the $1 trillion that's flowing through our community every year and pool that money into institutions that we control. And that's the beauty of us lifting us. Instead of us being victimized by being participants in economic institutions that are privately owned, we get a chance to build our own institutions that are collectively owned. And that's what we in Uplifting Us mean by family-centered economics. So I'll stop there, and you let me know which way we need to go, Sister Nana.
Well, thank you so much for that very astute observation that you have made concerning those recent current events, particularly relating to Trump's canceling the meeting with the Korean leader. I could not help but notice the clip that was shown on the news when Trump was asked to give some rhyme, reason, or explanation around the cancellation of the meeting. One of the first things that he spoke to was the military, and that we in the U.S. have the strongest military, and that we're continuing to add and to bolster our military. And I couldn't help but think to myself, okay, so this is what happens when the economy is in a downward spiral. Then the U.S. starts to posture and position itself using its military, because that's the moneymaker. That is a major moneymaker for the U.S., the military and being involved in warfare. And if we look at our history, from time immemorial, I would say that has held true. And I think you want to make a response to that, Brother Kimbizi. I'm going to give you an opportunity to do that. And then I see that we have a caller waiting who has a question or a comment. But go ahead with your response, and then I'll take the caller that's waiting.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to follow up on what you were saying. Gil Scott Heron made the point that the only problem with, he said, everybody's clamoring for peace, but the problem with peace is you can't make no money off of it. And you alluded to the war machine that is at the heart of capitalist economic systems. There has to be a war in order for the system to really churn. And so what we're witnessing in terms of Iran, in terms of Korea, is the United States setting the conditions to go into those countries and to make war. There's no interest in peace in the Middle East or peace in Southeast Asia. What they want is a pretext to go to war, because once the war starts, then the military-industrial complex shifts into high gear. All kinds of weaponry gets produced, bombs and bullets and munitions and everything goes into hyperdrive. And that's where capitalism makes the lion's share of its money. So if we are serious about wanting to create an environment and a world that is peaceful and where there is cooperation, that is antithetical to how capitalism operates in the 21st century. Well, as a matter of fact, from the 18th century on, this economic model requires war making to be efficient and to be effective for those people who benefit from that. So I'll pause there, and we'll come back to that after the caller.
Oh, wow. Yes, very astute observations and important points that you're making. And I see that we do have a caller that is waiting with a question or a comment. And 1570, caller 1570, do you have a question or a comment? Please go ahead.
Well, I was listening to the discussion, and as an economist who has set up cooperatives and engaged the geopolitical debate, there are a lot of truisms in what you say, but the larger question is, when has it not been this model? You go back to principally Pax Romana in particular, and Pax Britannia, when you had predominant economic war machines, capitalism in some areas did flourish, but at the same time it also broke down with this focus on the individual as opposed to the group. I was speaking with Brother Hakeem the other night, pointing out to him that in as much as you're looking for people to participate in the cooperative model, you have to have a suite of both services that inexorably are tied to the larger economy. And so, again, as an economist, you know, it's not a question of color, it's a question of capital and how capital flows. To the extent that the discussion needs to focus on one element, geopolitics versus an economic element, the economic element, I believe, the discussion and your group needs to focus on is the economic equation, capital displaces labor. Going back to H.G. Wells and imperialism and a number of other treatises, question of technology displacing workers has been the age-old foe. When if there was no cotton gin, there would not have been any American slavery. If indeed the Union did not have the technological advantages it did, it would have probably lost to the South. We go through these periods, the Luddites in the 1800s in Massachusetts. You're witnessing it, of course, with the creation of Silicon Valley and the integrated chip displacing workers as a cooperative venture in an era where there are going to be less jobs and more technology. You've got a tension here that supersedes politics. It talks about economic need. And I don't hear in the discussion how you address the need, and more importantly, how do you match it to a particular color or group? It's about consciousness. The cooperative movement in this country, or if I should go back to my roots in Georgia and Alabama, you know, when the Underground Railroad started, it was a question of consciousness, not necessarily color, because all cooperative people have to work together. And so there's, again, this question of the tension between the goals of us lifting us up and actually the focus on the individual mechanism addressing it. But you all have had a very good discussion. I'd like to hear some more. And I'd like the other individual who was on earlier, if you could take a look at that question of capital displacing labor and the question of cooperative consciousness. It's not a color. And so in refining, uplifting us, who is the us? Is it just black people? Is it Gullah Geechee people? Who is it that we are bringing in? Because, again, in all my years of creating co-ops and both and running them, the failure has always come down to individual choices as opposed to collective choices. There's a lot of economic literature on it, but I'll cede the floor to hear some feedback.
And, caller, I need to extend an apology to you. We usually start by asking the caller to introduce themselves and to let us know where they're calling from, what city, state, what part of the country or out of the country. So would you introduce yourself?
My name is Malcolm Ashley. I'm an economist and a systems engineer trained at Yale and Georgia Tech and born in Tuskegee, Alabama, raised in Atlanta. Currently calling you from Connecticut, but I'm about to get on the road to go back to Georgia tomorrow. I have worked in cooperatives with USDA, USAID, set up some pioneering cooperatives in Connecticut, Connecticut Energy Co-op, the NOAA Aquaculture Cooperative, to name a few. And I've worked with groups that are setting up co-ops and have co-ops both in Ghana, Cape Verde, and Liberia. But more to the point of this discussion and of black empowerment, I am a survivor of American apartheid. The experience, I'm sure, was very different in different regions of the country, but I don't think anything was as pernicious and as violent, as dangerous as growing up in Georgia and Alabama in the late 50s and 60s. The question, again, about the consciousness of who is us, brings me back to Georgia and Clarence Thomas, Walter Williams, Thomas Sowell, people of color who have used economics to our detriment. And thus, again, the question of consciousness, what is the litmus test for consciousness in uplifting us? Because therein lies the success to the co-op, because unfortunately everyone's value chain and value set is different. Only the structure of the cooperative enforces a symbiotic continuity on members to act appropriately and to do the right thing. There's a prologue that I have for work that looks at black empowerment in Atlanta with a number of folks that I grew up with. And the caption is, "All the King's men couldn't put the dream back together again. At the death of Martin Luther King, you had a number of people from various class orientations that fractured the civil rights movement in terms of what are the goals." And so, again, the absence of a clear consciousness is the question that I'd like for you to grapple with, because when people looked at Omarosa, Malagant, and other people that worked for the Trump administration, people were aghast. But then people were aghast at all the numbers of people of color that voted for him, that have put us in this. And these are some of the same people one would presume from your message would automatically be welcomed in and automatically be solicited to. And their value sets, particularly in certain institutional settings like cooperatives, could prove a death knell to it.
Okay. And what I would like to do, how I'd like to handle response to your question, and thank you very much for the points that you've made and the questions that you've brought up. You did mention a dialogue that you'd had with our elder advisor, and that's upliftingus.com, Baba Hakima Kenyama, and I believe that he I see that he's called in, and so we'll ask him for a response, and Brother Kambizi as well. So why don't we move ahead and do that? And Brother Kambizi, would you like to comment first, and then we'll move on to Baba Hakima and to get his response to our caller's question. And thank you again.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Sister Nanana, and thank you, brother, for your call and your comments. You raised several points. The first one that I would speak to is that your question frames the critical issue in our conception of how we go forward with our cooperative, us lifting us. In other words, the question that I hear you asking is, what are the undergirding values that guide the work that we do? You know, you mentioned what are the criteria around the consciousness. We have a values and ethics document at our website, usliftingus.com, and you may have already looked at it, but if not, I encourage you to do that. Because to your point, that goes to the very heart of the society we seek to build. Our values are a combination of ma'at, which is truth, justice, righteousness, order, balance, harmony, and reciprocity. Those core principles really guide the decision-making and how we interact with each other individually and collectively. Also parallel to those values are the Nguza Saba of unity, self-determination, collective work and responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith. So those two sets of values kind of interchanged and operating side by side provide a value matrix for the kind of people and the kind of behaviors we want to exhibit. Now, I mentioned those values because if we're going to really live those values out, we need a certain economic system. Capitalism is not a benign system that just operates or follows whoever happens to be guiding it. Capitalism is the embodiment of a particular set of values. Materialism, individualism, the notion that white people are superior to people of color and thereby have the right to dominate them, competition at all costs, these and greed, because in order for capitalism to work, it has to constantly pursue maximum profit. If you made 10% last week, next week you have to make 11%, and then the following week after that you have to go for 12%. It's insatiable, and because of that, it is unsustainable. So we at Us Lifting Us are putting together an organization, an economic vehicle and infrastructure that allows us to practice the values that I outline in terms of Ma'at and the Nguza Saba. Without that value matrix at the base of our activity, then we will lose our way. So the first thing is the consciousness that you refer to has to be the consciousness of those values and the commitment to live and practice those values. That's what sets the foundation and guides the work as we go forward. Let me stop there, Sister Nanana. Baba Hakima may want to join the conversation and bring in some other insights.
Yes, thank you. And I will ask Baba Hakima if he would please provide a comment to the question that has been posed. What would you like to add for us this evening, Baba Hakima?
Greetings, sis, and greetings, family, and greetings, Brother Malcolm. I'm glad you called in. I'm suffering with a bad cold, and I'm probably going to cough all over the place. And what I would rather do is just to and of course, as we know, these calls are archived or recorded, so we can look at and listen to the salient points. And I think the points that our brother made are very well taken, and in many cases they're on point with what we already have in place. I think the thing that I would want to say overall is that in referring to our mission, that of building maintaining and passing to future generations the machinery of economic self-determination. Certainly, we're not building this machinery for anyone other than those that we identify as family and who join us in this pursuit. And the building of the machinery is essentially, or the lack of building of machinery is, and I think Brother Cambisa talks about it a lot of times in terms of making history. If you don't build the machinery, then what is the difference between yesterday and tomorrow? It's essentially the same. The conditions are the same. So in terms of identity, us lifting us, we're clearly talking of those brothers and sisters who are of and alike the dominant people of Africa, wherever they are in the world. And we're unapologetic about that. There is a human right to associate with the persons that you choose to. Now, in terms of business, obviously, as is current, there are Europeans and Asians and who do business with us, and we welcome that business relationship. But the system that we choose to put in place is not for everybody on the planet. And nobody does that. Nobody on the planet builds a system, a process, an infrastructure for everybody. Now, we're told that we should do that. And traditionally, we've fallen for that, such that, and to the extent that, we haven't built very much of anything for ourselves. So I welcome our brother's comments, and he has a wealth of knowledge and experience, and we're going to learn from him, and we're going to go down the road to economic self-determination together, hopefully, but we're certainly going to pick his brain and bring over to Ulu some jewels that he has to share. That would be all I would have to say, Sister Nanana.
All right. Thank you so much for that comment. Yes, we are certainly having a very rich dialogue this evening. And thank you, Baba Hakima, for chiming in with us, and certainly appreciative once again of Brother Malcolm and the points that he has brought up. I see that we do have another caller who is wanting to either make a comment or ask a question, and so I'm going to go to that caller right now. And that caller is at 5103, caller at 5103. Do you have a question or a comment that you'd like to make? Please introduce yourself and let us know where you're calling from.
Hey, everyone. Peace and love and blessing to the family. My name is Sean. I'm from the Bronx. I've called before.
Wonderful.
I just think this is just a great – I just think it's a – great conversation, guys, you guys are having. And something that Brother Hakima said I would like to reiterate on is that, you know, I'm from New York. I'm from the Bronx. And I live in an area that's majority African descended and Latino and others. But I noticed that when other groups of people do group activities, East Indians, Arabs, Hispanics, they don't really include us at all. Like, you know, a lot of them don't have hatred towards us, but they build for their community. And it's like no shame. They're unapologetic about it. You know, and it's a lot of times we really lack that. And sometimes we worry about other people and other people's concerns. But I'm telling you, when people are building their empires, they're not too concerned about our struggles. Very, very few people are. And, you know, we need to have that mentality that, you know, it's okay to build for ourselves. And that's why I joined Ulu, because, you know, it's unapologetic, very progressive, not, you know, angry and saying bad things about people. But, you know, we're proud to be people of African descent, and we're happy to work together. We love each other, and we're really trying to move our communities forward in an economic way, which is going to make the best impact. So, you know, just wanted to add that onto the conversation.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Sean,
no problem,
for your...
And can I say one more thing to you before you respond to that, please? And
for
I'm going to
sure.
hang up. Can you Can you talk a little bit about how Cafe Ulu is going and how the local people in the community are receiving you guys and receiving the business when you finish answering that question about us, you know, working together and being proud of to be people of African descent who are trying to reconquer our own reality? Thank you very much, brothers and sisters. I'll talk to you next week.
Well, thank you. And, you know, why don't we just have a little segue right now, since Sean has asked that question about Cafe Ulu, why don't we just have a little segue right now and go ahead and talk about how Cafe Ulu is doing. Cafe Ulu is progressing quite well. People within the community are acknowledging and recognizing Cafe Ulu as the place to be. And so what we are seeing each week is that the number of customers coming into Cafe Ulu is continually increasing. We are seeing that the what we call the conversation corner in Cafe Ulu is being booked up, that people are scheduling in advance to have the opportunity to have their conversation corner at Cafe Ulu. And so overall, I would say that things are looking quite well. We still need to do a little bit more work as far as our online products are concerned, and making sure that we have everything lined up appropriately in terms of pricing and mailing out of the coffee from the website, but that's coming into line quite well. So, you know, that's my comment concerning Cafe Ulu. Brother Kambizi, would you have anything to add to that?
Certainly, Sister Hakima, and I want to thank Brother Sean for his comments. Yeah, he's absolutely right. We are building Us Lifting Us as an economic cooperative for African descended people. It's just that simple. We're not hating on anybody else. We're just loving ourselves, and building the economic infrastructure that our community needs. It's also important to understand, and to your point, Sister Nanana, about Cafe Ulu, I would just add that for those who may be on the call and may not be aware of it, Cafe Ulu is a business that we launched out of Us Lifting Us. And it is a cooperatively owned internet cafe and lounge, so that everyone who is a member of Ulu is an owner of Cafe Ulu. And the door remains open. All people who continue to join Ulu, who become members of Ulu, also become owners of Cafe Ulu. So right off the bat, we as a community get to experience what it means to be a group owner of our own business enterprise, and that's a new experience for the overwhelming majority of us. We're accustomed to walking into businesses that, for the most part, are privately owned and operated by other communities. Whether it's Macy's, whether it's Kroger's, whether it's Home Depot, whether it's you name the institution. It's generally owned by a small group of shareholders, and we are just consumers in those businesses. At Cafe Ulu, when you walk in the door, you're walking into an institution that you are part owner of. And that requires us to begin to shift how we think about the economics that surround our lives. Brother Malcolm mentioned other people that have been in our community but have not always worked in the best interests of our community. And what that points to in my mind is the truth that this business of taking control of our own economic destiny first and foremost requires a shift in the way we think. We call it a new economic paradigm. In other words, instead of seeing ourselves only as consumers, we now are becoming owners of the economy that serves our needs. And that's important because only as owners do we really begin to be able to behave democratically, begin to be able to be self-determining. As the resources come back into our businesses, in other words, as they come into profit, we then have to make the decision how those profits will be utilized, what services in our community need to be enhanced, things like the educational institutions that serve our children. We put money towards that so that our children can get the high-quality educational experiences that they need to function in the 21st century. What are the healthcare services available in our community? So our businesses have resources that we can put towards improving healthcare. And then a portion of that surplus comes back to we as owners in the form of what we could call dividends. But again, we have shifted our role in our own lives by becoming masters of our economics and not just the fodder that other people use to make profit off of. So Cafe Ulu, as you pointed out, Sister Nanana, is doing very well. I was in there today, and a lot of traffic. There was a health screening, and seniors were invited to come in and get answers to questions regarding not Social Security, but Medicare and Medicaid. And so there was a lively group of people in there. Professor Leonard Jeffers was scheduled to come in later, but his flight got delayed. But you're right. Cafe Ulu is a place where a lot of activity and events are taking place. And people are coming through just to feel the vibe and be part of that energy. And again, it's a business that we as African descended people own and operate and benefit from together. Let me pause there, Nanana. I'm sure you have some questions or comments.
I think one of the thank you for that detailed explanation around Cafe Ulu. I think one of the most powerful elements to look at in terms of Cafe Ulu is that this is a business following the cooperative economic model to the T that Ulu has espoused, and that it can and will be duplicated. We are going to duplicate Cafe Ulu going forward into the future, and we will be establishing other co-op businesses as well that can be duplicated in other places, not only here in the continental U.S., but we're talking duplication globally, and that Us Lifting Us is a global initiative. So keeping all of that in mind, what we're saying moving forward is that we're only scratching the surface now with the success that we're seeing with Cafe Ulu, and we are definitely encouraging others to take a look at what we're doing with this initial business venture, and then to dare to win. In other words, to take that step of joining Ulu and of becoming not just a member, but becoming a member owner, which means that you purchase a share in Us Lifting Us and truly become a business owner and participate fully in what that is all about. So moving further with our dialogue, we started out talking about current events and how that related to the economic structure that we have now, which is a structure of capitalism. And Brother Kimbizi, I'm going to ask and invite you to give a little bit more explanation of the differences between cooperative economics and the capitalistic system that we have been so steeped in and so immersed in that sometimes we just assume that that's the way that it has to be, and that capitalism is, in fact, perhaps some of us think that it's the only route. So can you draw a little bit more of a picture for us in terms of the differences between the two?
Thank you, Sister Nanana. Yeah, first and foremost, it comes down to a question of who controls the means of production. And by means of production, I mean things like land, factories, the internet, whatever systems are being utilized to provide goods and services to the society. That is the means of production, including the people who do the work. That's also part of the means of production. And in capitalist society, the means of production are privately owned and controlled. The businesses are privately owned and controlled, and they are designed in a way that there's a contradiction between the people who do the work and the people who own the enterprise, in that it takes all of the work and all of the workers who make up the enterprise to produce the surplus value. The people who own the enterprise say, because they took the greatest risk, they control the surplus value. In other words, a portion of the surplus value is used to pay the wages of the hourly workers, pay off the expenses, and then the rest of it goes into their pocket. And they are constantly increasing their share of the profit and working overtime to reduce the share of that surplus value that gets paid to the workers in the form of wages. So, you know, workers fight tooth and claw for decades to get to a place where they are getting paid a livable wage. They have enough money to buy a house, to send their children to college. And because the owners are always trying to increase their profits, they're constantly looking for ways to introduce labor-saving equipment. So enter robotics. And where companies used to employ, say, 10,000 workers, once they start using robots, that workforce can go down to 5,000 or 2,500 or 1,000. And so those workers get laid off. And most times they have a very difficult time finding comparable employment. Or the company, the people who own the enterprise will realize, well, you know, hey, if we move this operation to Mexico, instead of having to pay these workers $20 an hour, we can pay them $2 an hour and get the same work done. So you look up and cities like Detroit and Gary, Indiana, and places in Kansas and St. Louis, all of those Rust Belt towns are gutted as these captains of industry who are the owners of these businesses make the decision to relocate their plants to Mexico and the Philippines and Indonesia and Vietnam and places like that. So and they shutter entire towns and give no thought to what will happen to the people who used to work there. That's one of the primary differences between how a capitalist economy works and what would happen if those same businesses were a cooperative, in that the workers who worked there owned the business. I'm sure they would not shutter the plant and allow it to leave the country. They would find a way to solve whatever economic problems they were facing and keep the business open and keep themselves employed. And at the same time, strengthen the communities in which they live. So that the primary difference between capitalism and cooperatives boils down to who owns and controls the enterprise. In a cooperative system, the people who work there and who are in the community that it serves, they are the owners of the enterprise, and they are the ones who make decisions about how the enterprise will be run. In a capitalist system, the owners are private people, oftentimes who may not even live in that community, and their primary concern is maximum profit, even if it means destroying the environment in which the factories or the businesses are located, even if it means making the workers sick because the work environment is substandard and subpar. It just boggles the mind when we think about all of the decisions that these privately owned businesses have made over time that have proven to be disastrous for the communities in which they operate. And so it is imperative that people who want a sane and sustainable community and economy, cooperatives is the only way to go. It's a slow process to build it from the ground up, but over time it will pay huge dividends and allow our children to have a future where they can grow up healthy and strong. What more would you want me to say on that, Sister Nanana?
Well, you have certainly provided a wealth of information and education in those comments. And what sticks with me were the two terms that you used, sane and sustainable. In other words, cooperative economics and the cooperative model basically makes sense, and it is a model that can that has a lifespan over an enormous amount of time, that it will go on for as long as we want it to go on. So I'm very appreciative to hear that terminology, sane and sustainable, and I will remember that.
Mm-hmm. Let me say one point right here to that. All we have to do, for example, is look at the issue of global warming and climate change. There are people in decisions of power. There are people in power decision making, you know, making decisions about what we should do as a nation in the face of global warming. And people like Trump and a lot of these business owners, these corporations, deny that global warming is even taking place, that the severe weather that we're seeing is unrelated to human activity. Meanwhile, the storms, the severe weather systems, the hurricanes, the tornadoes, the droughts, the wildfires, the mudslides, the earthquakes, the volcanoes, all of that is disrupting lives in all of the places where people live. And all of us are seeing the effects of global warming. And yet the people in Washington who have to make policy regarding that, because those changes would mean that we would have to reduce the amount of carbon dioxide that we're putting into the air, we would have to reduce the different kinds of manufacturing processes that we use, that would mean that the oil industry, for example, would take a financial hit rather than do something sensible and logical that would protect life. They will rather pour their money into putting people into office who, like them, deny that climate change is something that we have to deal with, and more people perish. That is insanity, but that is capitalism in its late stages.
And I really appreciate that explanation because it's very simple, it's very clear, and it's one that is certainly easy to understand, the difference between sanity and insanity. And so the choice is very obvious and very clear for us as people of Black African descent. What makes sense for us is to pursue and to embrace the cooperative model, because that is what will ensure not only our survival, but ensure that we thrive going forward in the future. And we're going to start to wind down here with a few minutes left, and I just want to make sure that our listening audience once again will take note of our website. It's usliftingus.com, usliftingus.com. And when you go onto our website, you will see a tab that says join. And for those who are not members or member owners at this point in time, please click on that tab and you will be provided with a space where you can fill out your contact information and receive a contact from one of the board members of Us Lifting Us to assist you through the enrollment process. If you have questions or need additional information, please feel free to call us at 404-592-2780. That's 404-592-2780. Leave your name and your phone number, and you will receive a call back from a board member to answer your questions and give you any further information that you need. Please join us again next week. We're here every Thursday on Blog Talk Radio starting at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And we are on for an hour sharing information about Us Lifting Us Economic Development Co-op and looking at what's happening around the world globally and how that affects the economy, because we very clearly need to start seeing ourselves as being global citizens. And with Us Lifting Us having membership all around the globe, that's very important. So thank you, Brother Kambizi, for having joined us this evening, and look forward to another wonderful Us Lifting Us radio talk show again next week. Thank you. Good night to all.
Good night.
Good night.
Life is one big road with lots of signs. So when you're riding through the ruts, don't you complicate your mind. Flee from hate, deceit, and jealousy. Vision to reality, yeah. All together now. Wake up and live. Wake up and live. Wake up and wake up and live. Yeah. Wake up and wake up and live. Jersey Shore, where more than